Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins by near third. This game is over.
A complete game. What a performance by Cliff Lee.
Victorino in the alley calling. He's got it. And the Phillies are going back to the World Series.
Welcome back to another episode of Continued Success, part of the Good Fight podcast family, your favorite Phillies podcasts in Philadelphia and elsewhere. I am Justin Clue, the head guy at the Good Fight, and with me this week is Allie Foster, pinch hitting for Liz Rocher. Allie Foster, contributor to the Good Fight, also a content creator for Mother Puckers, the all-female hockey podcast, and the editor-in-chief of Phillies Flyer. Hello, Allie.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for stepping in. Liz is, of course, I don't know, I'm assuming anyone listening probably follows Liz on Twitter, then you are aware that she is a citizen of Dayton, Ohio, which was recently ravaged by a tornado, and she was pretty close to one and is currently unavailable for podcasting, if you can believe it, after surviving a situation like that. So we are acquiescing to that by having Allie step in. And Allie, yeah, very, very happy to have you here.
Yeah, definitely glad that Liz is okay. I know that that can be a little scary. So I'm glad that she's okay and taking the time to make sure that everything's right with her. So, and I'm happy to be here in her place.
Yes, it is us who get to talk about the Phillies series win over the Cardinals, as well as other items of the day in regards to Phillies and Major League Baseball. And we're going to do what we always do on Continued Success, which is journey back to 2009 and talk about what the 2009 Phillies were up to around this year, or around this time that year. And we're going to be talking about what Allie was doing this time 10
we
years
are.
Ago, actually, by a fun
something
coincidence.
Exciting. Yeah.
But Allie, something we've been talking about on Continued Success and Hitting Season has been this stretch of games the Phillies are currently wrapped up in, where they're playing pretty much the toughest teams the National League has to offer all in a row before settling back into NL East and AL Central teams. But they've played four games against the Brewers. They played three games against the Rockies, then four in Chicago against the Cubs, and three more against the Brewers. And then this Cardinals team was probably one of the softer series they were playing, because we're going to be right up against the Dodgers on the West Coast starting on Friday, which is probably, I mean, at this point, I don't know if you're ready to start making predictions on this level, but like, this is potentially an NLCS preview. It's certainly the two best teams in the NL going at each other for a couple of games. So at this point in the Phillies schedule, after this rough stretch where they've managed to keep their head above water, how do you view the Phillies' chances here as they're about to face one of the other titans of the National League?
You know, first of all, I have to say that I got goosebumps when you said potential NLCS matchup, just because it's been so long. You know, it's been such a long time since you really could say, hey, the Phillies could be in the NLCS this year. And, you know, I do still think it's too early to really say. You know, baseball's such a long season, which is great. But at the same time, it's like, okay, it's the end of May. Like, it's only 2 months in. Anything could change. Any team could do something crazy. You know, we have the trade deadline coming up soonish. And it's like any team can suddenly become either really good or really bad. But yeah, I mean, they've had a really tough matchup the past, you know, few weeks, and that definitely is going to continue into this series. And right now, yeah, you've got the two best teams in the NL going at it against each other, and I'm a little nervous to see, you know, we have, who is it, Arrieta, Eflin, and Pivetta going up, and it's, you know, you kind of look at the Dodgers offense and you're like, okay, we're throwing out Arrieta and then Eflin and Pivetta. It's like, you got kind of three question marks there. So it's a little, you know, if everything goes well, if all three pitch really well, then it could be a really good series. But, you know, it also could be one of those, you know, I really do. I think at the end of the season, we'll look back and we'll look at this series and it's going to be a season definer. Either they're going to play really well and they're going to continue to play really well, or I think, you know, if they don't play very well in this series, it could hurt them in the long run.
Yeah.
So It's definitely.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to get myself psyched up for it, but I do have this feeling of dread that I think you're hinting at as well, just because when you say all three of those guys are question marks, I mean, that's just it, isn't it? That like, we're talking about a rotation that just has not been able to establish anyone in particular as a stopper. Meanwhile, mm-hmm. you got Cody Bellinger in LA putting up Babe Ruth numbers. He's ready to just eat any of those guys alive. We only recently saw some real Aaron Nola-ness from Aaron Nola, but again, you know, that's not going to be an option, even if this has been the Aaron Nola turnaround. I mean,
Arrieta's last outing was good. So that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's a pace setter, hopefully, you know, since he's got the opener. So maybe, you know, if he goes another 8 beautiful gem innings, then, you know, maybe that sets the tone for the rest of the series. But, you know, obviously with Arrieta, again, like up and down, you could get 8 innings of wonderful, beautiful baseball out of him, or you could get, you know, 4 with, you know, 6 earned runs.
Yeah. And he, I'm trying to look here. He's not unable to give you 8 innings, but he's established himself so much more as a 5-6 inning guy. And boy, right now the mm-hmm. Phillies could use a series where they just put up 7-8 innings. They get 7 or 8 innings from their starter because this bullpen is in pieces.
The bullpen is in desperate need of a Band-Aid or two.
Well, I'm going to jump on my list of topics. I'm going to jump down to one since we're talking about it anyway. And that is, yes, of sure. course, we all know how the rough shape the Phillies bullpen is in. Adam Morgan is now gone down. We heard Victor Arano had surgery. Obviously, David Robertson's been out for most of the season. Tommy Hunter hasn't been available most of the season or the entirety of the season. And that's, you know, Pat Neshek no longer an option. I mean, things are grim. Mm-hmm. And here we are in this precarious position. We're about to face the Dodgers, one of the other best teams in the NL. And, you know, the sun seems to be setting on the Phillies' effectiveness out of their bullpen. And suddenly, out of the shadows, steps this young baby-faced gentleman with a head full of shaggy hair and the most enormous glasses since Harry Carey was in the Cubs broadcast booth, named J.D. Hammer. He comes out. He makes 3 straight 1-2-3 inning appearances with 5 strikeouts. I got to tell you, even before he threw a pitch, this guy was just begging. I was just begging for this guy to be good just based on his glasses. He's got a gimmick, which of course to him, I'm sure isn't a gimmick. It's like, you know, his personality and who he is, but like to the fans, it's like, oh my God, the marketing team for the Phillies is probably like, if this guy catches on with any sort of popularity, we can start selling novelty glasses. His name is Hammer, for God's sakes. The headlines write themselves. I mean, everybody tweeted Hammer Time when he just got promoted. If he is able to maintain any sort of effectiveness from an entertainment standpoint, that would be huge. But from just a pitching standpoint for the Phillies, that would be even bigger right now. I mean, this is a guy I'm so ready to be excited about him. But boy, I feel like I've been hurt so many times. I am just unwilling to trust pitchers right now. I feel so burned out. So I don't know. I mean, so let's not talk about if he's the real deal or not, because that shit is impossible. We can't plot that out. I mean, I think the best thing to do is to talk about how huge it would be if he was. Like, let's assume this Dodgers series ends and J.D. Hammer's made a few appearances and they've all been just as wonderful. I mean, what's been your take on Hammer since he's been promoted in the brief time the Phillies have had him?
You know, so first of all, I think this Phillies team doesn't really necessarily need another guy. You know, you have all of these money. I mean, that you go up and down the lineup and you've got guys that you can market, which, you know, having another one is just, you know, icing on the cake for the Phillies marketing team. But as far as, you know, him, I actually saw him about a month ago. I did a trip to Reading and Lehigh with my friend Amanda, and we saw games in both, and we saw Hammer pitch in Reading, and it was the first time I'd ever really, I knew who he was, I paid attention, I'd kind of seen his lines, but I'd never really, really paid a whole lot of attention to him. I'd never actually seen him throw live or, you know, on video or anything. But that game, I saw him and I turned to my friend Amanda and I was like, he's got really good stuff. And I was like, he's going to be effective at the major league level. And, you know, is he going to be able to continue his, you know, three perfect innings of, you know, is he going to be able to go 1-2-3 every single inning? No, of course not. He's, you know, he's going to give up hits. He's going to give up runs, but you look at him and there's just something about him that he is smart and he executes. And I knew a month ago, you know, and I didn't know a month ago that he was, you know, going to be at the major league level now, but you know, I knew that if he got the opportunity, he was going to be successful just from one inning of work in Reading a month ago. I knew. And, you know, it's very easy to see he's got the talent. And you know, I hope that he's able to continue executing the way that he has.
It would just be so nice to have somebody come in right now who you could just believe in. I feel like so many relievers the Phillies have had this year, you know, the bullpen's really come through. I'm talking about it like it's been a weak point all season long. It's definitely, they've lost a few games because of the bullpen, but the bullpen has definitely come through as well this season. But it just seems like every time there's an effective pitcher, maybe Gabe Kapler tries to stretch him into a two inning appearance. We all know how that has typically gone. But then, you know, it came up that the Phillies might be sending they are sending Vince Velasquez to the bullpen, Cole Irvin to the bullpen, and now he's got a couple of guys who are more used to pitching multiple innings. But just to have that weapon like Hammer to be able to come in, 95-mile-an-hour fastball, and like you said, just really, really intelligent about how he uses his stuff. Part of that's probably just the glasses and us looking at him and assuming that he is smart. But also, he has, you know, we've watched him pitch. He is he knows how to use what he's got. And just to have that going into this series, but just also just going forward, just to have the farm system produce an arm like that and not have to go outside and start trading assets for a bullpen arm at this point is, man, it would just feels like it would only technically be solving one problem, but it feels like it would be solving so many problems just to have, you know, some new blood out there who the league hasn't seen before, who is just by default going to be able to confuse or keep hitters off balance, and that just has the stuff that's good enough to keep them off balance. So, yeah, like you said, it's only been three appearances, so we've still got a lot more to learn about J.D. Hammer, but thus far what we do know is all good, and, man, it's a good time to get good news for the bullpen right now. So that's the series that we're looking ahead towards against the Dodgers. The Phillies finished up a series with the Cardinals today. They took 2 out of 3. They lost this final game of the series this afternoon in Philadelphia. They lost 5-3. They seem to be mounting a comeback at certain points during this game. I think right at the end, it seemed like they were scaring something up in the eighth inning. And then I believe earlier in the game, there was a bases loaded situation that the Phillies wound up squandering as well. I don't know. I mean, this was a winnable game, Allie. Like this was it was an Eichhoff start once again, like the Pivetta start. He gave up runs early, kind of set the tone of like, what are we getting into here? But then he managed to hold his own. Eichhoff gave the Phillies 6 1/3 today. He gave up 4 earned runs and 8 hits, no walks and 4 strikeouts. He did give up 3 home runs though. He's a guy who, that's probably one of his vulnerabilities, is that he does give up home runs, and in Citizens Bank Park, that's going to come back to get you. But after he was done, Edgar Garcia came in. He pitched 2/3 of an inning. Hammer pitched 1 inning, and Yaxel Rios threw the last inning. And he actually got 2 big strikeouts to get himself out of a big spot as well. So I don't know. I mean, it always seems to mystify teams when they're trying to finish up a sweep like this, even a team that the Phillies have seemed to be able to beat this year in these first two games. Suddenly it just seemed like the tide was going the other way today, but I don't know how winnable did you feel this game was? Cause I felt like they let one slip through their fingers this afternoon.
You know, in the beginning of the game, I wrote it off. I was like, all right, you know, they took 2 out of 3. Eichhoff did not look good in the first few innings. You know, he was leaving everything up in the zone. His breaking pitches weren't breaking. And, you know, he gave up the home runs. And I was like, all right, you know what? It's, let me just focus on work. Let me turn it, you know, turn my live feed off and not bother. But then, you know, I kept looking back and I was like, but they're still in it. And, you know, and I think that's one of the things about this lineup is that they're never really out of games. And especially games where, you know, even though they dug themselves in a hole early on and they were kind of playing catch up, you know, it was kind of like, but they can still do it. And so early on, yeah, it was kind of like, all right, this is a wash, you know, whatever, 2 out of 3 is great. But then, you know, they started coming back and they did have the bases loaded. Hernandez grounded into what could have been a double play, but he was too mm-hmm. fast. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they got the run there. At one point it was 5-2 and Hoskins was up with runners on first and third. And I can't tell you what inning it was. I can't tell you like anything else that was happening. Cause I was watching, but I was back and forth between work. And so I wasn't really watching and paying full attention. And I kind of had this moment where I was like, one swing ties this up, mm-hmm. you know, one single swing and you've got the guy, you know, you've got Rhys Hoskins at the plate. You've got the guy, that could do it. And then I was like, but any of these guys could do it. It's not just Hoskins. It's, you know, you go down the lineup, McCutchen, Segura, Harper, Hernandez, Kingery, you know, Franco, Bermudo. Like any of them. Yeah. He didn't play today, but you know, on a normal day. Yeah. It's like any one of these guys could tie the game with one swing of the bat. And, you know, you have that kind of feeling in your gut where it's like, I think, you know, we kind of the past few years have really been when they're out of it, it's done. And it doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't matter if it's the second inning or the eighth inning, you know, you're kind of like, all right, you're looking at a 3-run deficit and you're like, all right, game's over. But, you know, I'm starting to get used to, you know, this lineup and having that feeling of no deficit is the end. You know, until there's 3 outs in the ninth inning, this team is still in it. And so, you know, it was definitely one of those like out of body moments where I was like, but they could still do this.
It's a good feeling. And it is a foreign feeling. You're right. Like I got as disgruntled as anybody watching them homer their way through the top of the second. But by the time the dust settled, you're like, you know, it was just 2 home runs. They're just up 2-0. That's not insurmountable. Where in seasons recently past, it very realistically was insurmountable for this team. Yeah. And
2 runs were insurmountable in the past few years. Absolutely.
Yeah. And maybe there was one guy in the lineup that you would want up to tie the game. But like you said, it's even just that Harper, and I know you said Real Muto didn't play today, but that just that block of Harper, Hoskins, mm-hmm. Real Muto alone is just like, all right, it's like, you know what I just really reminds me of is trying to pass Boardwalk and Park Place with a bunch of hotels on them. When you roll the dice like that, it's like, you know, when you got hotels on the best possible properties, then the chances are the person coming by is going to land on one of them, you know? So it's just like, it's a good feeling. And because the last time this team went to the playoffs, they had become a obviously very pitching focused team, and their offense, I remember thinking this at the time, their offense had the capability of turning any game into a pitcher's duel, whether it was Roy Halladay versus, I was going to say John Lannon. That's probably the one example that I shouldn't use because the Phillies have always battered John Lannon, but I don't know, pick somebody. Jeremy Guthrie's another terrible example. There we go. Well, I mean,
CC Sabathia.
Yeah, I mean somebody.
Although maybe middle not of the him road. Either. Depending on the year, 2008 CC Sabathia, 2009 CC Sabathia.
Everyone in your own your private pick, homes, but, think yeah. of some painfully average Major League Baseball pitcher and pretend that's who I'm referring to, because it could be Roy Halladay versus him or Cliff Lee versus him, and that your pitcher would show up and give you 8-9 shutout innings, and the Phillies offense would be like, well, hopefully we'll squeak one out here and make that stand up, because you know the Doc's going to be able to make one run stand up. But now they've got this team where it just feels still, you know, we're just waiting. Every start is like, is this going to be the turn around the corner for whoever? Aaron Nola, Zach Eflin? Is this going to be the start of a series of stable, impressive starts? Meanwhile, or is it the alternative that they're going to give up some runs, but the offense, is that going to be able to overpower the amount of runs that they give up? It's just, yeah, we're watching a different team. And they're in first place, so we're watching a different good team. It's just a different kind of good team. I think this game, you know, I said I felt like they let it slip through their fingers. But when you have a team that's set up like that, that's not true. Like, they didn't squander their opportunities. They did. They came back. They didn't just lay back and let every opportunity slip through their fingers. That's not true. It really just came down to a couple of pitches. It really just came down to one pitch, actually. And that was in the sixth inning. In the bottom of the sixth, they had started rallying. Gene Segura had worked a one-out walk. Bryce Harper had slapped a double. And then the Cardinals had intentionally walked Rhys Hoskins. And the bases were loaded for Cesar Hernandez with one out. And you're just like, boy, if there's anybody you want up in this situation, I mean, if there's anybody you want up in that situation, it's like anybody in the lineup. But if there's anybody you want right now up in that situation, it's Cesar, who has just been on fire in the month of May. And he did. He made solid contact and he hit a searing line drive that just happened to be right at shortstop Paul DeJong. And he managed to turn an unassisted double play and ended the rally. And I think, you know, yeah, this team could still had time. But it really, to me, when looking back, really came down to that one pitch. So I'm going to correct myself and say they didn't really let this slip through their fingers. You know, you just you make the contact you're trying to make, and you know, on a different play, the shortstop's not positioned there. That ball goes into the outfield, and the Phillies take the lead. But unfortunately, that's just not how it went today. So no reason to be discouraged by this series, even though they weren't able to pick up the sweep. Nevertheless, we've got plenty of baseball to talk about right after we get back from this first break. So, unfortunately, there was a series of other baseball news involving the Phillies in the past week. And, you know, I didn't necessarily feel like touching on this, but I do feel like we probably should, just because, you know, we haven't talked about it on any of these podcasts just yet. And, you know, Odubel Herrera is somebody that we have talked about a lot on these podcasts, obviously without the context of the situation that happened this week when he was arrested for domestic violence and placed on administrative leave. And, you know, we've used a lot of time to defend Odubel Herrera, because the prior to this, he's obviously been a very a player who I've always said operates just in extremes. So when he's hot, he's really hot. And when he was bad, he looked really bad when he was bad. And that stirred up a lot of it made him a very polarizing player. Let's just say that. So he's been defended a lot on this podcast. Obviously, the situation that's coming together looks like he did something pretty indefensible. And, you know, the rest of this is just relies on the series of extremely unpleasant and disturbing details that I'm sure we're going to unfortunately learn as Major League Baseball conducts its investigation. But, you know, Herrera already reportedly apologized to Matt Klentak in a very brief apology, it was reported. But, you know, that seems to indicate he knows he did something wrong. And if he's trying to deny that any of this happened, that hasn't surfaced yet. So, you know, it's just it's the same kind of story we've heard before. And, you know, Allie, it's just it's I don't want to say it's more disappointing, but it's really, we haven't dealt with this on the Phillies. I know we dealt with Gabe Kapler's. We'll continue to deal with the story that surfaced about Gabe Kapler when he was the director of player development with the Dodgers mm-hmm. over the summer. But one of the players really hasn't been in the papers for this reason. That I can think of, at least not part of this generation. And, you know, now here we are. It's just like, well, this is the Phillies term, because this is apparently an epidemic in professional sports. We're sick of hearing about it. We're sick of talking about it. And I mean, it's disappointing, because this is a guy who interacted with lots of kids and lots of fans and just seemed to, you know, I remember I told people he was a fan favorite. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was a fan
and,
favorite.
And, you know, it just goes to show you that, you never really know any of these guys when you're viewing them as fans from far away. You know, yeah, you could maybe you show up on autograph day or whatever, but you don't, you really don't know them. And unfortunately, it's left, you know, as I've gotten older, I've become a lot more cynical about it. And I was just telling the Good Fight staff the other day that, like, you know, Andrew McCutchen doing a dance with a kid in the stands, you know, and he's been so good for the Phillies and he's so funny. And then they, he and Dusty Wathan have the rock, paper, scissors tournament going on at third base. Yeah, I love it.
I love that. I love that. That's like my favorite thing of all of the weird, like, you look at this whole team and it's like, that's your favorite, really? But
yeah, and you should. And like, that's exactly, the Phillies picked up on that. They put something out on their Twitter account today that was that updated the score of how that was going. And I bring that up because, you know, it just makes me want to, you know, I trust that less. It makes me not want to, it's not like McCutchen specifically. It's just like, oh, I want to be a fan of his, but now I feel like I got to hold back because, you know, what if some bad shit comes up? Because it feels like it, there's always that possibility. And I don't know, how did the Herrera situation leave you feeling? Because I know I'm pissed off. I don't want him anywhere near the team. And yeah, I just, it just sucks.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you said epidemic, that word. I actually looked it up. He is the 13th Major League Baseball player since March of 2016. So just over 3 years. Who has been investigated for domestic violence. 13 in 3 years. Like, that's ridiculous. And that's just the ones who have been investigated. You know, that's just the ones who have been caught, you know? And, mm-hmm. and obviously I don't want to think that there are more. Like you said, you want to think the best of all of these people, but you know, that's just 13 who've been caught. And you know, obviously we do have to wait and see. They're doing an investigation, but you know, that all of the evidence kind of points to this, you know, and I don't want to immediately crucify the guy until we have all the facts. But at the same time, it's very evident that this is most likely real, you know, and there is a fine line there. I don't want to immediately crucify someone the second that, you know, you hear a lot of false stories or mistaken stories, but this doesn't seem like one of those. And so, you know, until the facts are all out, you know, I am reserving some judgment. But at the same time, you know, this is inexcusable, and it does very much seem like it is legitimate and that it is real. And if that is the case, I want him gone. I don't want anything to do with him. I don't want him around anyone else on this team. And I'm very angry about it because I have been one of those very strong Odubel Herrera defenders. You know, and I've been one of those people who said, you know, he has been one of the cornerstones of this team, of this organization, for so many years. He's a former All-Star, and you know, he is, you always see him with the kids and you always see him smiling. And you know, and the Phillies you know, marketing team always, you know, has him as, you know, one of their guys because he is so marketable. And you know, when something like this happens, it does make me very angry that I have been defending this person who would do something so disgusting and so, you know, inexcusable. And you know, it's not just Major League Baseball that has this epidemic.
Oh,
you know,
God, no.
You've seen it with the NFL, with Tyreek Hill, with the Chiefs. The NHL just recently suspended Slava Voynov through the 2019-2020 season, but he was, you know, allowed to be practicing it, and it was like all this stuff, like he straight up admitted it. And you know, it's every single league has these issues, and you know, there isn't, no one's really handling it very well, and it's very, it's very frustrating, and it makes me very angry that, you know, as a female sports fan, you know, what are these leagues saying to their female fans that, you know, our players are, you know, beating their wives and girlfriends. And even if it's not an all the time thing, even if it's just a one time thing, it's like, they're acting like this towards their wives, girlfriends, you know, whoever fiance is, and you're just letting it happen. How am I as a female sports fan supposed to be okay with this? And it's so infuriating. And I want someone, and I'm hoping that the Phillies will be that someone, but I want someone to step up, you know, a team or an organization or something to step up and say, this is inexcusable. We will not tolerate it. And, you know, and handle the matter appropriately.
And yeah, with the Cubs and Addison Russell, so recently in everyone's memories that like that has become the comparison to this situation as well. Like, oh, that people are saying, don't be the Cubs because the Cubs put up what I believe. And, you know, I don't know if everyone else, this, I'm sure not everyone else agrees with this. I believe that the initial statement the Cubs put out that was very lauded by members of the media and fans that said, like, look, we're taking this seriously. We are going to be that team that does the right thing here after we, you know, he's going to learn. This is going to be a process, blah, blah, blah. And then here we are. He's starting for the Cubs, and he has done nothing but talk about the situation as though it was something he had to go through and he was forced through and he had to overcome. And it's just been something about him. And so that tells you,
I did something and got caught for it.
Right. It tells you that, oh no. So he doesn't understand the situation and the Cubs don't give a shit. I think the Phillies have an opportunity here. I'll be honest. I would love for them to do the right thing. They're a professional sports franchise, and just because they're the one that we follow doesn't mean they'll necessarily be the one that makes that change. They're in a position here where, yeah, I saw someone say on social media, look, I was a big Odubel fan. My son is a huge Odubel fan. This is going to crush him. But, you know, sliver of a silver lining here is that my young son will know, presumably, that there are repercussions for things like this, that someone even in a professional sport sees repercussions in a serious way, and that is handled very gravely when you commit an act like this. And that is important, I think. Then again, are they going to do it? You know, are they going to
exactly?
And like the most cynical view of this possible is, yeah, look, they made a big point of saying like Odubel Herrera, you know, he's at the moment he's on leave. He's been removed from all-star balloting. Like, yeah, okay. Odubel Herrera has not been a very good baseball player since May of last year. If we're talking about a better player, or if Odubel Herrera has become a centerpiece to the Phillies offense, I'm not convinced. And like, I don't want to get into hypotheticals here. It's just a matter of if he's having a better season, that a professional sports team has in the past gone out of its way to insulate somebody from from the fallout of a situation like this.
You see that all the time in every sport. If you're a superstar on the team, they are going to protect you from anything and everything. And yeah, definitely. If you were talking about someone who was more influential on this team, maybe it would be a different story. I did see somewhere, I think it was Klentak said, you know, they plan on being entirely transparent about this, and you know, those are the right things to say. I just hope that they back up those statements.
Yeah, me too. And yeah, like you said, there's an investigation going on. The situation is unpleasant enough already. It would be great if somehow some indisputable evidence surfaced that proved he'd like done nothing wrong. That does not seem like it's going to happen. So the Phillies are going to wind up being in a position where they gotta make a choice of what kind of reaction they're going to have to this. And they could potentially be the team that has the right one, but you know, a lot of what the right move here is going to be defined by everybody. And everybody might have a different idea what that is. I think you and I are pretty much aligned here that presumably if what is still considered allegedly that he's done turns out to be you know, real, then we don't want him anywhere near this team.
No, and nobody, get him away.
Nobody should, frankly.
Put him on a rocket ship to the moon or something. I don't want him anywhere near here.
Well, the last thing we'll talk about before we get back to the 2009 Phillies is Allie.
Yeah.
Safety netting. Why is this a debate at all? Is my question.
It shouldn't be. It really shouldn't be.
So just to give context, as I'm sure any baseball fans listening know, Albert Almora of the Cubs hit a line drive into the stands, hit a very young child, obviously not on purpose, but got the attention of everyone in the section immediately. She was taken to the hospital. He was footage of him hugging a security member of the security team and sobbing. Sort of became the reason that it quickly circulated social media and reignited what is for some reason a debate about safety netting at Major League Baseball stadiums. I mean, I'll tell you what, when I was a kid, I used to wonder why this didn't happen more often, because they hit a lot of foul balls at high velocities, mm-hmm. and there was less safety netting back then than there is now. And I don't know what the reasoning is for not putting it all around the stands, that people feel like it's going to be an obstruction of some kind, or that, well, people should just pay attention. And these are such terrible, weak points that I'm not sure why they're entertained as actual points. Like, this is not a debate. You want to see less people sobbing at baseball games? I would assume everyone does. This is how you prevent that pretty much across the board. Why are we talking about this?
Yeah, you know, it's actually funny. I work for a minor league baseball team, and this season we actually extended our netting past the end of our dugouts, and we did it, and we said, you know, we're doing it because fan safety is one of the most important things to us. And we did have a few of our season ticket holders were like, you know, we're not really fans of this. And you know, it's kind of like, I understand from a certain standpoint, you know, one of our season ticket members, she's an amateur photographer and she likes taking photos and the netting gets in the way of that. Which I understand, you know, that's frustrating if that's the situation, but at the same time, it's like, you know, this is something that keeps people from getting hurt. You know, you look at, how many times do you see, you know, line drives right back at the pitcher? And these are guys who are literally paid to throw and catch baseballs. And, you know, they don't catch it. You know, how many times are there, you know, it's called the hot corner for a reason, where line drives go straight at third base and the third baseman can't catch it. These are guys who, they have gloves to catch the ball and they're mentally and physically prepared to catch the ball and they don't, you know, and it gets past them or, you know, sometimes it hits them. And, you know, to say that, you know, a fan should just be paying attention, that's not how it works. You know, it's very dangerous, especially when you're in some of those high foul ball areas, you know, and so putting up that netting is so important. Because it really does. It keeps people from getting hurt. And, you know, that Albert Almora whole situation, it was heart-wrenching. I mean, I didn't see any video, but I did see the photos. And it's just like, you know, obviously that's not his fault. He shouldn't feel guilty for it. At the same time, I understand how he could feel guilty about it. Because, you know, it was off of his bat, but it's not his fault. No. And you know, that's something that, you know, and it was definitely nice to see him. That sounded weird. I don't want that to come.
No,
weird.
It's just the empathy of it.
It's nice to see that, right. He cared, you know, it's nice to see that it did affect him, that, you know, he wasn't like, oh, whatever, you should just have been paying
attention.
Oh
my God. Can you imagine?
But like, you know, that's a horrible, like, you know, it is nice, but at the same time, it's like, that's not his fault. And, you know, in those situations and, you know, maybe you're perfect baseball fan is always paying attention and has the reflex to catch the ball when it's coming at them at, you know, however fast it's coming at them. But, you know, your average baseball fan is not equipped to protect themselves. And so that's, you know, with having that safety netting, you know, as far out as it goes, however far it goes, you know, that really is, it's something that is there to, at the end of the day, protect the fans. And that's what's important.
Yeah. And especially, like you said, when a team is saying, well, fan protection is the most important, that's the priority here, which it probably should be, like, and because again, it's not that hard to protect fans from projectiles at games. You just got to do this. And all it takes is the image of Albert Almora sobbing to make someone saying, but my amateur photography, be like, yeah, okay, but come on. Like, we're talking about children getting hit by line drives here. You can find a way to make this work. So yeah, unfortunately that became the hot button item of the day. So I think with that, we'll hit our second break here and talk about the 2009 Phillies and what they were getting up to at the start of June, right after we get back from this break. Well, back in 2009, you wouldn't believe the parallels that were alive and well between the 2009 team and the 2019 team. The offense was carrying a struggling pitching staff, if you can believe that. I didn't realize that could happen to baseball teams. But yet, doing the fallout of that was that the Phillies were rumored to be considering making a trade. Now, who that was for, you know, that's any number of talented pitchers on the market in 2009. But it's just interesting to look at how the Phillies planned to acquire that talent, which was by trading members of their at the time considered stacked farm system. It was at the time Dominic Brown and Michael Taylor were down there, and at the major league level, you had Raul Ibanez, who was tearing it up. You had Jason Wirth, who was he was also a very established presence in the National League. And then Dom Brown, who was essentially, it hadn't been said out loud, but he was essentially untouchable in any trades. Like, he was the guy the Phillies wanted to hold on to, him and Kyle Drabik, at that point. So, the Inquirer interviewed Michael Taylor, another outfield prospect who was viewed as a powerful hitter. And he just kind of had this realistic view about it, where he was like, oh, you know, I would love to get to the major leagues with the Phillies, but he kind of broke down everything I just said, where he was like, look, I'm not an idiot. I can see this guy's really good and this guy's really good, and I have all these guys in front of me. So, you know, I can see the writing on the wall here that if somebody goes, it's probably going to wind up being me. And he wind up getting traded. I remember seeing him playing for the Sacramento River Cats at one point. I forget, I think that's an A's affiliate. I forget who they work with, but in any case, that was just a little peek at the way the Phillies were, who they considered their biggest assets and the state of their farm system at the time. It's always fun to look back at the time when the Phillies considered Dom Brown untradeable, and I found what I believed to be the first ever comparison to between him and Daryl Strawberry, which always
that's
makes me laugh.
So Sacramento is the AAA affiliate
of the Giants. All right. That makes a lot of sense.
Yes. Yeah, but no, Dom Brown should have never it's so frustrating. That whole sentence is so frustrating. I can't even string some words together. Just to, like, Dom Brown, really? Dom Brown, of all people, like, that was,
I mean,
your
in general, like, we all love Dom Brown. He came up eventually, I think, in 2010. His first at bat.
Didn't he come up and then?
Oh, yeah, that was part of the issue with him. What are the Phillies doing with this kid? But he came up in 2010, his first at bat against the Diamondbacks. I remember I was watching this in Urban Saloon on Fairmount Ave. And he hit a double off the wall that was almost a home run. And it was just like one of those moments where you're like, yes, we got it. Like, we have an opening in the outfield. Our top prospect is an outfielder. Look how good he is. This is great. But in general, the Daryl Strawberry thing just tells you how unfair and meaningless, the comparisons to like legendary baseball players for unproven prospects. Like, it's just useless, and you see it all the time. In our last Dirty Inning, we read a comparison somebody made between Ryan Madsen and Randy Johnson, which, just because they were both tall, no, was basically the reasoning. But yeah, that's what was going on behind the scenes. The Phillies started June pretty okay. They won their first four games. They won the first 7 of 10. Then they absolutely hit the skids and looked like shit from about mid-June till the end of the month. They lost a lot. We'll get into that in the next episode. Right now, we're talking about the beginning of June and happier times. Jamie Moyer got his 250th career win on June 1st. Howard and Utley hit back-to-back home runs on June 2nd. Jay Happ stopped the Padres as part of on June 3rd as part of a three-game sweep of San Diego in San Diego. Then the Phillies traveled to L.A., split a series with the Dodgers. Cole Hamels got a 3-0 win facing Clayton Kershaw on June 4th. May 31st, or May, what's the date today? 30th. May 30th. Also, I just remembered that May has 31 days and that tomorrow is not June. But in any case, Allie, who I almost called you Liz for the first time, and I wanted to get to the end of the podcast and say, no, I didn't call you Liz once, and I still haven't, but it almost happened, and I just, I wanted to warn you. But Allie, I almost did it again. You were 10 years ago, we discovered, somewhere pretty significant to our interests here on Continued Success.
I was, yeah. So I was scrolling through my Facebook memories today, and just so happened to come across 10 years ago today, a post that I said, at the Phillies game with my fave softball team, Ryan Howard is the man. So I was at the game 10 years ago today, and the Phillies always have their like baseball softball night where, they bring in groups, and my high school softball team went to the Phillies game as a group, and Ryan Howard was the man, which I actually looked up, and we had really confirmed Ryan Howard. He was 2 for 5 with 2 home runs, 5 RBIs, including the first home run was a solo shot, the second one was a grand slam. And the Phillies won that game. So yeah, 10 years ago today, also 6 years ago today, I was at the Phillies game. So lots of Phillies games on May 30th in my history, but that one, May 30th, 2009 was a good day.
It was a good day for the Phillies too. Like you said, they were in the middle of sweeping the Nationals at the end of May, which was, pretty easy, a lot easier to do back then than it became. But Howard was doing okay. He was hitting .265 with a .903 OPS by the time that game was over. Obviously not the most impressive numbers, but for Howard, that's just pretty much where you lived. You wanted him to come through and hit 2 home runs in a game like he was doing. So this was prime piece territory. This was the good stuff. Do you remember anything in particular? I mean, obviously we know what happened in the game, but time travel not being an option for us, every time we do these games, and living in Philly as a college student at the time, I try to think as much as I can about just like what I remember Jason Stark talking about the stadium at this time being one of the most fun places to be in sports. He said it about 2008 and 2009. I mean, we were in full swing. The team had won the World Series, so everybody was coming down to the ballpark. So do you remember anything about like what the vibe at the park that night when they were playing the Nationals?
Yeah. So I was at the point, we were actually partial season ticket holders, so I went to a lot of games. So that game specifically, there are a few things that stand out that probably aren't not really baseball specific. I remember being with my friends a lot, and I'd never been to games with those friends, and it was a Cole Hamels start, and I remember we were really excited about that because we were all like huge Cole Hamels fans, and I remember going on, we had to wait outside. And then we went on to the field through the, right field, like gate on the, like underneath the field, kind of where, the grounds crew comes out of. And, yeah, I remember, coming out there and there was a parade through the outfield and Hamels was warming up in the outfield and we were all kind of just like walking really, really, really
hey.
Slow. To watch him. Like, it was like, you know, you don't think about, even when you're at a game, you're so far away and you're getting to watch a guy that had just won the World Series MVP title, you know, warming up, even though he wasn't, you know, he wasn't doing anything spectacular. He was just warming up, but he was right there. And, you know, and there's a photo on Facebook somewhere of me and one of my teammates. Like they told us you are not allowed to touch the grass. And we took a real quick photo of like the two of us bending down and touching the grass. and I remember the silly things from that day, but it was a really good day. And on top of that, it was a good game to see, which, you know, is always a good thing. But yeah, it was, I remember the silly things and Cole Hamels sticks out and Ryan Howard sticks out as the two big things that were really important about that game. And touching the grass.
Always touching the grass. Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they gave you a lot to remember from that game. Anytime Big Piece goes yard twice is a game worth remembering. But yeah, I speaking of memorable moments, I mentioned sort of quickly, and I do want to dwell on this for just a second, but I mentioned sort of quickly that around this time, Jamie Moyer hit his 250th victory. And, you know, it's Jamie Moyer. You know, we all love Jamie Moyer. But when you're for young Phillies fans at this point in history, basically you're looking at people whose favorite player was Cole Hamels, Chase Utley, Ryan Howard, Jimmy Rollins. I like Shane Victorino. I know a lot of people love Jason Worth. I mean, Raul Ibanez was really popular because he was new and he was doing so well at the start of the season. Chooch was a big one. I mean, you know, even Brad Lidge was sucking at this point. He did win. He did actually get four saves in a row around this time of the season, which was huge considering how bad of a time he was having. But Jamie Moyer, I've got to say, he probably was more adults' favorites than children's favorite player because he's like 46 years old at this point. He's got an 82 mile an hour.
He was a dad.
Yeah, right. Like everybody's dad loved Jamie Moyer because they were like, it made them feel like, oh, I could get out there and do that. It was like when John Kruk was on the team in 93. And he I think he had some quote about like, yeah, couch potatoes across the country all think they can play Major League Baseball now. And they see me playing and they're like, if he can do it, why can't I? And Jamie Moyer, I think, had that effect on, you know, everybody's dad.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, it's funny that you say that, though, because, like, I remember learning about Jamie Moyer when they first got him, and my favorite player from that time frame and probably my favorite athlete of all time is Chase Utley, and he was always the one. Like, he was always my choice, and Shane Victorino kind of gave him a little bit of a run for his money for a brief while. But, like, it was always Chase Utley. And, you know, when they got Jamie Moyer, it was one of those things that, like, I was like, okay, this old guy, like, I'm supposed to like him.
What's
like,
he got?
What am I supposed to do? What am I supposed
to do?
That's
an 82 mile an hour fastball.
Like, I could hit that. Come on. I could hit that. And that's, you know, that's my dad throwing batting practice to me. But no, you know, the more I learned about him, it was one of those things that was like, he's local. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I read somewhere and it's been a really long time since I saw it, but I'm pretty sure like he skipped school in 1980 to go to the World Series parade. Which, you know, is something that I skipped school in 2008 to go to the World Series parade. So it's like Jamie Moore and I have something in common. But you know, it's like, you know, the more I learned about him, the more endearing he became and the more that I fell in love with his story, the more I rooted for him, and so, you know, for him to hit a milestone like that, you know, first of all, it's a testament to how long he played. You know, you don't just hit something like that. Just any day.
He won 216 of his 250 wins came after his 30th birthday.
That's crazy.
I mean, that's a lot. Crazy. Yeah. They tried to toast to him with champagne afterwards. I mean, they did, but he was so quick to be like, oh, I don't really care. I'm more here like the team victory, yeah, you know, blah, 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 which is so Jamie Moyer, because he was so low key about everything. He was just so chill. He was like the chillest ball player. And there's so many guys who have come and gone from even just the Phillies who were terrific ball players, who were terrific guys, who you were just like, man, I really hope this guy gets a World Series title. And so many of them didn't. Roy Halladay didn't get a World mm-hmm. Series title. That, you know, that's going to sting forever.
That one hurts.
But like,
that one's going to hurt forever.
Exactly. Yeah. But like, Jamie Moyer got one. And like, that makes you feel so good, because Jamie Moyer deserved one. I mean, he got his 250th win. You know, I wanted to make sure we didn't gloss over it, because it was a big deal. And the Inquirer put it on the front page of the paper, but it was the front of the sports section, just big red letters, 250, listing all the other pitchers in history who had 250 wins. He was number 46. And I mean, you look at this list, and it's not an easy feat. And it still looks kind of weird to see Jamie Moyer's name next to Cy Young, Steve Carlton, Nolan Ryan, Bob Gibson, mm-hmm. like some of these guys who are known for being dicks, like guys who are known for like throwing at hitters and throwing really hard. Randy Johnson's in there, Tom Glavin's in there. I mean, then you just see then it's Jamie Moyer. He basically underthrew wiffle balls to hitters for 50 years and did it. And like, wasn't he still pitching for the Rockies when he was 50 years old? I mean,
I don't remember exactly, but you know, it's crazy. I actually just did the math, and I was like, you know, how long does it realistically take to get 250 wins? And I just did the math, and I was like, let's say that you get 20 wins a year, which is a sizable number of wins. 20 wins a year. To get to 250, you have to do 12 and a half years of service in Major League Baseball. Like, that's insane. That's insane to me. 12 and a half years, you have to average 20 wins, which doesn't happen. Like, that doesn't happen. So like, how dominant do you have to be, or how just long, you know, how dominant do you have to be over such a long period of time to get to that number? Like, it's incredible that, you know, I mean, that's 162, you know, he won more than a full season, vastly more than a full season of baseball games. And that's, you know, it's incredible. So, you know, it was definitely one of those things that like, I was very happy to see happen. And it's still, you know, like you said, you look at it and you're like, Jamie Moyer is one of those guys.
Jamie Moyer, it'll always be the longevity of Jamie Moyer that flummoxes people, followed by the fact that he never mm-hmm. really had overpowering stuff. You look at his stats, he led the league in three things in his entire career on three different occasions. In 1987 with the Cubs, he led the league in earned runs with 114. In 1996, he had the best winning percentage as a member of the Red Sox and then the Mariners at 813. And then in 2004, mm-hmm. he led the league in giving up home runs when he gave up 44 home runs as a member of the Mariners. And he was 41 years old. He was 49, by the way, when he was pitching for the Rockies. That was his last major league experience.
Okay.
Anyway, his career spanned 25 years. When Jamie Moyer made his first minor league appearance in 1984, Ronald Reagan was president. When he made his last appearance, Barack Obama was president. He spanned from the president of the 80s through several administrations into Barack Obama. Like, that's, yeah, I'll never not be floored, and I'm glad we took the opportunity to talk about it, because he was an all-star.
When was his major league debut? Do you know? Do you have that right in front of you? I was trying to look it
up. His major league debut was on June 16th, 1986. He actually pitched against the Phillies.
1986. Mm-hmm. That's just to put that into perspective. I wasn't born for another seven.
That's awesome.
Years.
I was born that year. Yeah.
I wasn't born for another seven more years.
And he was 23.
And he pitched less than 10 years ago.
While you were busy not being born, Jamie Moyer was throwing 6 1/3 innings against the Phillies.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So that was, yeah, that's the Jamie Moyer story. We've talked about him. We've gushed over him a couple of times on the podcast, but that milestone he hit in 2009, it was really impressive, and it gets even more impressive the more you learn about Jamie Moyer. So I'm glad we ended on that positive note, because that that always makes your, it gives you butterflies thinking about what Jamie Moyer was able to accomplish with a 60-mile-an-hour heater in Major League Baseball.
Absolutely.
Well, Allie, thank you so much for joining me on Continued Success. We had really enjoyed talking to you, and hopefully we'll be talking to you again in the future. As always, everybody, you feel free to, well, don't feel free, feel obligated, feel pressured to subscribe, download, and rate all the members of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hittin' Season with John Stolness, as well as this show, Continued Success, and The Dirty Inning with myself and Dr. Trevor Strunk. We've got an episode coming up that's it's a real piece of shit. You're going to love it. But thanks again for listening to Continued Success, and we will talk to you next week.